dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I'll be guiding you around the battle space of the war of ideas today. We'll be talking with Ray Locker, the managing director of a terrific organization, the Investigative Project on Terrorism, about the latest, fortunately, intercepted plot in Denmark. What does jihad have in mind for us, both of the violent kind and the stealthy kind, in 2011? We'll be taking that from one of the top experts in the country, Ray Locker. Segment three, we'll be talking with Andy McCarthy about yet another lawyer who works for terrorists being appointed to a senior position in the Obama Holder Justice Department. What is up with that? What will it mean for you? Then segment four, Sarah Carter will be giving us an end-of-year perspective on the challenges to American security that we saw emerge in 2010 and that we're likely to see emerge in 2011, including, in the latter regard, a new Cuban missile crisis in the making in Venezuela. You're not going to want to miss what Sarah Carter has to say about that. First, I want to talk about another recess appointment. We'll be getting to James Cole in the Justice Department with Andy McCarthy momentarily. But first, Robert Ford, a diplomat, has been appointed during the congressional recess by President Obama to the position of ambassador to Syria. And this gives us an opportunity to do a little stock-taking, it seems to me, about Syria and what American policy towards that country is all about at the moment under President Obama. We're hearing, of course, that there's a lot at stake in Syria, and therefore it's ill-advised not to have a U.S. ambassador on the ground there, something we haven't had since about 2005 when President Bush, quite properly, it seems to me, withdrew our ambassador to protest Syria's unmistakable involvement in the murder of Rafik Hariri, the prime minister at the time, in Lebanon, a country that Syria has essentially colonized, certainly occupied, for decades. And even in the aftermath of the efforts of the Lebanese a few years back to force Syria to withdraw, Syria continues to play a direct and very malevolent role in Lebanon's internal affairs. But that's not all. Syria is also up to its eyeballs with Hezbollah, an instrument for its continuing control in Lebanon, including facilitating, at least as a pass-through, if not as the source, of advanced weapons that are migrating in huge quantities from Iran, in some instances, from Syria itself, to Hezbollah. There are now said to be upwards of 10,000 missiles, rockets, missiles, and the like, now in the hands of Hezbollah, many of them poised to attack our friends in Israel. There are, in addition, apparently, some number of Scud missiles, ballistic missiles, which could not only be used to attack most, if not all, of Israel, but also could be put aboard ship and brought close to our shores, a particularly worrying scenario that could involve the unleashing of an electromagnetic pulse attack against this country, presumably enabled, again, by Hezbollah's ultimate masters in Tehran. Then there's the whole issue of Syria's own pursuit of nuclear weapons, something it is doing covertly, was making very considerable progress thanks to help from North Korea and Iran, replicating a North Korean nuclear weapons-related facility, as it happens, for the purpose of getting into the nuclear weapons business. Syria is also engaged in an increasingly intimate rapprochement with our one-time friend and ally in Turkey, the country that has moved from a secular Muslim state and democracy to one that is increasingly Islamist in character and increasingly authoritarian as well. And then there's the matter of Syria's close involvement with Iran. Now, the U.S. government has for quite some time been seeking to extricate Syria from this relationship to absolutely no effect whatsoever. If anything, we have been subjected to increased contempt from both Damascus and Tehran for the utter futility of these efforts. Against all of this backdrop, now comes word that Dennis Ross, a longtime proponent and practitioner of the so-called Middle East peace process, a man who has been involved with the Obama administration till now, mostly in the background in this regard, but is apparently going to be replacing George Mitchell as the president's envoy for the purpose of pursuing peace between Israel and its neighbors. Well, Dennis Ross, we're told, has been meeting with Syrians in the interest of seeing if he can't restart the failed past efforts to force Israel to relinquish the Golan Heights to Syria. These are heights that are of enormous strategic importance. They were occupied for a time by Syria. When it became a country, they were lost by Syria in the 1967 war, fought over in the 1973 war, and have been part of Israel ever since. An important bulwark against renewed Syrian aggression against Israel. Now Dennis Ross is trying to prevail upon the Syrians to engage once again in talks with the Israelis that could then be used as the vehicle to compel, as I say, Israel to give up these heights. Once again, in the pursuit of peace through the surrender of territory. I can't imagine a more foolish agenda in the light of what is going on with Syria than this effort by the Obama administration to reestablish relations with the Syrian regime, to ignore the myriad problems that Syria is not just witnessing, but is party to. And on top of it all, to reward Syria for engaging in this kind of comprehensive malevolence against the interests of freedom, Israel's and ours. For the Obama administration to be doing this is hardly a surprise given how wrongheaded its foreign policy is, but still, it is wrongheaded, and it must not be allowed to go forward unchallenged. When Congress gets in, I hope they will be taking to task not only Mr. Ford, this recess appointment, and the people who made it, but also challenging the entire direction of U.S. policy towards Syria. Next up, we'll be talking with Ray Locker of the Investigative Project on Terrorism about what's ahead in that space in 2011.
Do you want the big picture on national security and foreign policy? Find out what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength at SecureFreedomRadio.org. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Holidays come and go, but the pictures are forever. How do you want to look? Now is a perfect time to make a new start for the new year ahead. And the first step is calling Judy Singer's MetaSystem at 800-711-JUDY.
On the MetaSystem, I lost 10 pounds the first week, and overall, I think it was 12 weeks, I lost 46 pounds.
Over the past 3 months, I've lost approximately 47 pounds.
With the MetaSystem, I lost 50 pounds.
Looking slimmer and feeling better isn't the whole story. Call 800-711-JUDY right now. The MetaSystem has worked effectively for thousands, and it can and will work for you. And with your MetaSystem purchase by December 29th, Judy Singer will take 10% off and throw in a free Go Anywhere Tote as your Christmas gift. If you're already on MetaSystem, call and see what we've got waiting for you. Say goodbye to the old you, say hello to the new you. Judy Singer's MetaSystem works. Call now, 800-711-JUDY. That's 800-711-JUDY. J-U-D-Y.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
This is the greatest country in the world. Every day, people in America live in 100% freedom. Our military allows us to do that. It's comforting to know that when American lives are lost in defense of our freedom, an organization like TAPS is there to help the friends and families of those who have died while serving our country.
TAPS, the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. Visit us online at TAPS.org or call 1-800-959-TAPS.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined for segment two of Secure Freedom Radio today with Ray Locker. He is the managing director of one of the most important organizations in the entire national security firmament, as far as I'm concerned. That's the Investigative Project on Terrorism, the product of a life's worth of work by Steve Emerson, one of our country's great visionary leaders and longtime defenders against jihad. And Ray comes to us after a career in the working journalism business, most recently as the national security editor of USA Today. And Ray, it's great to have you with us here at Secure Freedom Radio. Thanks for all that your team is doing, and for most especially sharing us some of your insights on the problems that we're confronting at the moment. Happy New Year to you.
Well, Happy New Year to you too, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's hope it is a Happy New Year. Let's talk a little bit about the outgoing year. We've seen a spate of terrorist plots, some attempted, some that have actually resulted in murders of innocent civilians. Most recently, just in the past 24 hours, we've had the breaking up, apparently, in Denmark of a plot against Jyllands-Posten and Politikens, the newspapers that were involved in an expression of freedom exercise, publishing cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad a while back. Tell us about that incident and more generally, what we're seeing in the way of this sort of violent jihadist enterprise in not only Europe, but here as well.
Well, in the Denmark case, we had five men from various parts of the Middle East, Lebanon, Tunisia, Iraq, who were arrested in Denmark and who were plotting against those two newspapers and trying to kill the cartoonists who created these cartoons in 2005 that featured the Prophet Muhammad. They were broken up by Danish police. And this, as you mentioned, is a symbol of what we've been seeing throughout Western Europe in recent weeks. And here, I mean, you have people who are operating primarily on their own, as far as we can tell, being inspired by people primarily they hear on the internet or elsewhere, and they're branching out, trying to launch a variety of attacks. We saw that a few weeks ago with the botched suicide bombing in Sweden that killed the guy who was trying to do it, but nobody else, and other cases.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Ray Lucker, I'm being told by some of my sources in the law enforcement community that actually, not probably in every case, but in a number of cases, including several here in the United States, would-be terrorists whose plots were either intercepted or foiled by so-called sting operations by the FBI, or in some cases simply by the good luck that their bombs did not detonate as they had expected, that a number of these folks actually have, if not knowledge of one another, a common tie to folks back in Pakistan or to Anwar al-Awlaki, the former imam of the mosque in Dar al-Hijra Mosque here in Northern Virginia, now operating the al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula cell out of Yemen, that these guys do in fact have ties, that there's not actually quite the lone wolf descriptor appropriate to them. What's your take on that?
Well, I think al-Awlaki, the guy who's operating out of Yemen, head of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, is, if not the actual operational leader of these people, he's their inspiration.
Yep.
He publishes, I guess that's the term now, an online magazine called Inspire that's in English that many people have been using, and they've cited as kind of the inspiration for their activities. He also beams things out over the internet, sermons that, you know, capture people here in the United States. And what makes him dangerous is he understands this culture very well because he's a U.S. citizen. He grew up here for a large chunk of his life,
mm-hmm.
Can speak in colloquial English, whereas many of the other radical Islamists we've run across can't. And that makes him very popular among the people who are looking to do this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Take Anwar al-Awlaki as an example. A man who for years was working in a mosque in the United States, among other things, was summoned up to Capitol Hill to lead a prayer service for congressional Muslim staffers and others in the capital of the United States. This is a guy who, if we pull the string, I suspect we find there are lots of folks like him in mosques around the United States. I'm not suggesting all Muslims or certainly all imams, but I'm wondering what your take is on this, what I think of as the sort of stealth jihad, the counterpart and in some ways the enabler of the violent kind that you track so well at the Investigative Project on Terrorism.
Well, I think what you find and what we found here at IPT is that there are a lot of people who preach at mosques throughout the United States, who preach a very radical, almost apocalyptic brand of Islam. And that gains traction among people who are predisposed to be angry, feel alienated, they want to act on it. That's not to say that most of the people who hear those kind of words do anything about it. They don't. Many people who pray at mosque probably pay little attention to what the guy says or what he's doing somewhere else. But if you read, you know, the source material for a lot of these preachers, it's very radical, and it comes down to their belief in, you know, a state that's run by Islam, follows Islamic law, and where, you know, and I think that's something that most Americans don't want to see. I mean, I don't think any, most Americans want to live in a theocracy of any kind, but that's really at the root of a lot of what these preachers talk about. Yeah. They want to live in a theocracy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is Sharia, I think, is their program and their agenda,
right.
And you're absolutely right. We've got to alert the American people to the fact that they do intend to bring it here. If we wish to stop them from doing so, we better get with the program. Let me just ask you to look in your crystal ball for a minute, if we could. We're talking again with Ray Locker, the managing director of the Investigative Project on Terrorism, about not just 2010, now coming to an end, happily, but looking forward. There's some chatter in the system that 2011, the 10-year anniversary of the attacks of 9/11, may well be a year of particular violent activity on the part of al-Qaeda and its fellow adherents to Sharia. What's your take?
I think it's only logical to assume that 2011 is going to be a big year for terror plots and terrorist activities. I mean, you look at what's happened so far in the last quarter of this year. There's been an increase over, you know, earlier in the year. You have Al-Awlaki. They keep doing what they're doing. They keep publishing copies of that magazine and telling people more and more ways to commit violence. You know, we've seen in the case of the thwarted plot in Portland, the one in Baltimore, two involving the Washington, D.C. Metro. I mean, there's more and more of this stuff happening.
Yeah.
So anybody who would assume that we wouldn't see more of that next year, I think, is misguided.
Yeah. And I guess understanding what the impetus is behind this is so important, not only to anticipating, but also to preventing these sorts of attacks. Getting right, in particular, this piece of the sort of stealth jihad that is the counterpart to and in many ways the enabler of the violent kind. Very quickly, we have less than a minute, Ray Locker. Let me ask you about Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi. I gather that you've reported recently that he wants to go out in a blaze of glory, killed by an infidel.
Right.
Who is this guy, and shouldn't we try to accommodate his wish?
Well, I'm not going to advocate any kind of violent activity. You know, Yusuf al-Qaradawi is one of the main theologians of the Muslim Brotherhood. That's the Sunni Muslim group that was created in 1928 by Hassan al-Banna in Egypt. It's kind of the ideological, theological wellspring of al-Qaeda. Osama bin Laden is a big adherent of many of their beliefs.
Yeah.
For some reason,
just about out of time, Ray. Let me just say, whether one advocates violence against Yusuf al-Qaradawi or not, he sure as hell is advocating it against us, and that makes him an enemy of this country as far as I'm concerned. Ray Locker, thank you for the superb work that you and your team at IPT do to protect all of us. Keep it up, and we look forward to talking with you, Steve Emerson, and the rest of you, your folks, in the new year. Many thanks for joining us. Next up, Andy McCarthy on the appalling recess appointment of a terrorist's lawyer as the Deputy Attorney General of the United States. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Can I have a price check on aisle... ma'am?
Yeah.
Don't look down, but there's a giant python wrapped around your leg.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's probably nothing.
Nothing? Shouldn't I don't know, like, call someone?
No, I don't have the time. I'm late as it is. If it keeps up, I haven't looked at.
Are you sure? That's a pretty big snake.
No, I'm fine. Thank you, though. You're very sweet.
You wouldn't ignore this, so why ignore the signs of a stroke? If you or someone you know suddenly experiences numbness of the face, arm, or leg, or sudden trouble speaking, seeing, or walking, don't wait to get help. Call 911 right away, because time lost is brain lost. To find out more, visit www.strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE. This message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This morning, a woman reached out. A man stepped up. A family drove their elderly neighbor to the doctor. Someone took 2 hours of their morning to help someone else find affordable childcare near work. Somebody sat down with 16-year-old Stephen and taught him better note-taking skills and study habits, and suddenly, toughing it out till graduation seemed to Stephen a pretty good idea. All this happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, right down the street. People are living united. We're not just wearing the shirt, we're living it. We're realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Radio that improves your chances for survival in a dangerous world. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Make Facebook your source for essential national security analysis. Search for Frank Gaffney and add him to your friends list.
Welcome back. We're joined by one of our stars here in the lineup of guests at Secure Freedom Radio. He is Andy McCarthy, the author of not only The Grand Jihad, the book about how Islam and the left sabotage America, but even more recently, a marvelous shorter read, a broadside from Encounter Books entitled Obama Embraces Islam's Sharia Agenda. Andy McCarthy, this is why we love having you here, is you're able to absolutely cut to the quick on so many of these complex issues. Let me wish you a happy new year. It's been great talking with you in 2010. We look forward to doing so with great regularity in 2011 as well.
Happy New Year to you, Frank, and I hope our conversations in 2011 are happier, although I think given what we have to talk about today, we're not off to a flying start.
Yeah, well, let's hope.
Maybe a crashing end.
Let's hope for the best. We'll definitely get our hopes up here. Let's start with the recess appointment by President Obama of a new deputy attorney general. We've been talking a lot about Eric Holder. Is there any likelihood that James Cole will improve matters at the Justice Department?
Well, no, this is an atrocious appointment. I really think it's not going to change the character of the Obama Justice Department. I think it's entirely in keeping with the character of the Obama Justice Department. We have a guy who is part Democrat insider and part volunteer in the sense of volunteering his legal services for some of the worst Islamist elements, including the guy who is behind the awful Saudi conglomerate known as Al Haramain, which is one of the biggest promoters of terrorism in the world. And as I keep trying to point out to people who don't like to hear these uncomfy things, when a lawyer represents a client in a civil case, he doesn't have to do that. In fact, most lawyers don't even have to represent people in criminal cases. A person's entitled to counsel for a criminal case. But a lawyer who helps somebody through a civil case is entirely a volunteer, and he doesn't have to contribute his legal services to the cause unless he chooses to. And I think that we're more than entitled to read into the fact that this particular lawyer, James Cole, chose to represent the guy who is behind the Al Haramain organizations, which were labeled as terrorism or designated as terrorism supporters by the government long ago, probably the most important of the enterprises designated as terrorism supporters, and even has represented the Saudi financial backing of what's known as the Al-Quds Foundation, Al-Quds being the name that Islamists use for Israel. And that's an organization, as I understand it, that helps backs the families of suicide terrorists. So, charming bunch of clients.
Yeah, this is actually revolting, I have to say. I was aware of some of the other problems with this nominee and the reasons why he was being held up in the Senate, but I hadn't realized that he's the latest in now quite a line of these lawyers who have, as you say, put their legal skills to the service of terrorists who are now populating senior ranks of the Obama Holder Justice Department. And it's revolting because we're in a war against these guys. Nobody's done a better job of documenting that than you. And it seems as though it's not too much of a leap to say, during the Cold War, it would have been like populating the senior ranks of the Justice Department, or maybe the State Department, with communists. I mean, I can't imagine what's going on here.
Well, look, Frank, I worked in the Justice Department, in Holder's last go-round. I was a prosecutor in New York during the Clinton years when...
Yeah.
Holder really effectively ran the Justice Department for the last couple of years. He was the Deputy Attorney General, but Attorney General Reno's health wasn't great at the time, so he had more than the usual impact. And a DAG, by the way, has enormous impact. I mean,
right.
Runs the day-to-day operations of the Justice Department. But to those folks, a war is something you fight against tobacco or health care fraud.
Cancer. Yeah.
Whereas terrorism is a crime, and this is what Cole has said outright. They certainly don't look at it as a war. They think that it's perfectly appropriate for the government's main response to terrorism to be civilian prosecution in federal court. And this is an appointment that is completely consistent with that philosophy. The outrage of it is that Obama, knowing how the country feels about it, waited until the dark of recess to do the appointment so that he could get Cole around the exacting questioning by a Senate Judiciary Committee, which is going to be getting some reinforcements in the Republican ranks in about a week.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a subject that segues nicely to one that I wanted to double back with you on. You wrote powerfully about the New START Treaty, warning members of the Senate not to allow it to be approved in the lame duck session. You took up the claim that Lindsey Graham made towards the end of that appalling cycle, where Republicans did in fact allow, and many of them enabled, the START Treaty, among other travesties, to be approved before those reinforcements arrived. Give us your sense of what Lindsey Graham was saying and why you took him to task about it.
Well, what he said was undeniably true, which is that the Democrats and Harry Reid in particular had rolled the Republicans. The way he put it was Harry Reid ate our lunch, which, you know, when I was in the Bronx had a particular meaning. Basically, it was a complete rout.
Right.
And it was a complete rout that happened in the very echoes of the electoral rout that the Democrats and Obama had suffered. So here are the Republicans with this mandate to stop Obama, and the first thing they do is basically enable some of the main ticket items on his agenda. And Graham was running around saying, you know, Reid ate our lunch, they rolled us, they got all these things through. And my point was that a large part of the reason that they were able to get it through was that people like Senator Graham and Senator McCain gave the green light at the beginning of the START negotiations that they thought this might be an acceptable treaty. And that made it a lot easier for a lot of these wobbly Republicans to not only consider embracing the treaty, but actually to hop on board.
Yeah. In fairness, Andy, both of them did, both McCain and Graham did vote against the treaty. But your point is what they signaled early on.
Yeah, it's a very clever game. You know, you green light it at the beginning. You play a coy game about, well, maybe we'll support it and maybe we won't. You get the momentum going in a direction where the thing can't be stopped. And then when it becomes clear that it's a catastrophe and you're Graham and you have to worry about a primary challenge the next time around, which doesn't come up until 2014, unfortunately, you then say, oh, my goodness, this is a terrible treaty and we've been rolled by the Democrats, as if you had nothing to do with the rolling process. So, you know, maybe some people are buying it. I'm not.
Right. Right. Well, and accountability, I think, is the point you're making. And I certainly believe that we've got to be holding all of those who enabled this treaty.
Frank, I knew that this was a terrible treaty months ago. I don't think Senator Graham and Senator McCain, who are closer to it than we are, knew exactly what they knew about the treaty when they condemned it. They knew at the beginning of the negotiations when they sort of told everybody maybe this treaty is okay. So.
Yeah. Or they certainly should, at the very least. That's the key point. Andy, hey, listen, I've only got a minute left to do this, and it's really not time enough to do justice to it. But I would like to just, given all of your wonderful writing on the subject, can you tell us succinctly, when people say there's no such thing as Sharia, why they're wrong?
Well, it would be certainly news to Saudi Arabia and Iran, for example, where Sharia is the law of the country. So, you know, it's hard to believe that people take the position that there is no such thing. But, you know, it's like a lot of Islam, Frank. There are multiple interpretations of it. Some people, and this is a mainstream idea in Islam, regard it as a codified set of laws, and it's quite draconian. Others who don't want to face up to that fact would lead you to believe that, oh, it's a bunch of aspirational principles and it's sort of like a Chinese restaurant menu. You know, we can take the stuff we like and the bad stuff like stoning adulterers, we can kind of pretend that that's not in there. And then, you know, they can sort of poke fun at the people who tell everyone this is a pretty alarming problem.
And has to be worried about. Andy, we're going to have to let it go at that. I appreciate so much your clarity on this point and the fact that the enemy threat doctrine is unmistakably Sharia. You get that, and your work at National Review Online and in your various books and here at Secure Freedom Radio is deeply appreciated in raising the alarm about it. We'll look forward to talking much more with you about this in the new year. Be well until then. Next up, we have Sarah Carter joining us to talk about her perspective on the defense establishment in 2010 and what we should anticipate in the new year. Straight ahead.
Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Fire took place 3 years ago. There was a lightning strike. The winds picked up and the fire just took off. You're in shock. You don't know what you're feeling. You have nothing. I lost my home and 40 years worth of art. I never thought that I would need help from the Red Cross. They gave me emotional support to get up in the morning. I'll never forget what the Red Cross did for me.
Contact your local Red Cross chapter or visit redcross.org.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by Sarah Carter, our gal who covers the Pentagon about as well as anybody. She writes for the Washington Examiner, and she is a regular guest here at Secure Freedom Radio, and it's always great to have you with us, especially, Sarah Carter, at the end of the year to take stock on what has been the sort of most important national security developments of 2010, and we'll ask you in a moment to look into your crystal ball into the new year as well. But in the meantime, Happy New Year. Great to have you with us.
Happy New Year to you too, Frank. It's great. It's, we only have another day left, don't we?
And counting. That's right.
That's right.
Sarah, give me your sense, based on the kind of reporting that you've been doing so well for the Washington Examiner from the Pentagon beat, about the major developments that are likely not only to be remembered as important in 2010, but that will shape the future. I'm thinking particularly in places like Afghanistan, where you've spent a lot of time, and Iraq, Iran, and so on. Give us your view.
I certainly believe that Afghanistan is probably the most prevalent national security issue for the U.S. right now, up there maybe with Iran and North Korea, if we're looking back, you know, on this past year. And, you know, particularly the changing tide in Afghanistan, what's going to happen, you know, in the spring, come spring, with General David Petraeus's report to Congress? What is he going to say? What we can see is now, you know, we have nearly 100,000 troops over there in Afghanistan who are sacrificing a lot and have given a lot over this last year, many who have given their lives. And the information and reports that are coming out of Afghanistan, which I've written and others have written about corruption and growing problems with the Taliban and the Karzai government, this is all something that's going to exist into the next year, and it's going to mold how Afghanistan policy is shaped and what's going to happen. And unfortunately, you know, right now we don't know what's going to happen. We're caught between a rock and a hard place, and we're not where we wanted to be at this point in time at the end of this year with Afghanistan. It's only time will tell how the commanders on the ground and how the administration is going to handle this. Are we going to walk away? Are we going to stick it through? Are we going to make a difference?
Yeah.
That's the big question.
That is the big question.
Yeah.
The multi-billion dollar question indeed. In terms of other areas that have begun to emerge beyond the ones that we've all been seized with, notably Afghanistan, Iraq, and to varying degrees Iran, I know you have been following closely developments in other parts of the world, and I'd like to get your focus on those at least for a minute here. What other areas are you looking to play a bigger and bigger role in the national security of the United States in the next year?
Certainly Latin America and Mexico, focusing in on Africa as well. I think those are vitally important, and Yemen. If we're looking at Mexico, and you know, this has been a big part of my work over the years, and the growing problems with the Mexican drug cartels, which are truly these nefarious organizations that I personally call narco terrorists. The development of these cartels and their reach globally and how that has molded and changed the way we see the drug organizations. I mean, these are no longer just small or medium-sized drug trafficking organizations. These are weapons trafficking organizations, human trafficking organizations. They play a vital role in the security of the United States, and we have to keep a mindful watch of that, because that border of ours is so important. It's so important to our national security, and the ties that these groups have with other groups around the world is making it even more dangerous every day. So I'm definitely going to keep a good focus on Mexico. Another area that I think is very important is Africa, and we have to keep a close eye there. And in fact, we've seen, and I've talked to many intel sources about this, connections between drug trafficking organizations who are moving shipments of dope into the European continent. They're going through Africa as well. So this is a very interesting development and something that we have to keep our eye on. And the reach of Al-Qaeda. You know, we're seeing Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, and you know, over the last few years I've been writing about this, saying how this is going to be a potentially huge problem, and we're seeing now that this past year it was a potentially huge problem. We've been very lucky to thwart some of their attempted attacks, and so have the Europeans. But certainly Yemen, we have to keep an eye on Yemen and Somalia as well.
Yeah. Well, these are all flashpoints, as you say, that you're on the case. We'll look forward to learning from you how these are developing and what, if anything, the United States could be doing to mitigate the dangers that they represent. Sarah, let me come to a particular problem within one of those regions, and I think we've touched on this before, but I'm particularly anxious about this in the aftermath of the Senate's decision to approve the new START treaty, which the Russians have made clear they regard as a new basis for opposing any improvements to our missile defenses, and that is a bit further south in our hemisphere from Mexico, but a metastasizing cancer in the region is, of course, Venezuela.
Absolutely.
And as you know, the Venezuelans have agreed with the Iranians to allow ballistic missiles to be emplaced on Venezuelan soil that Iran will not only supply but man. And I'm just wondering, is this the kind of thing, in your estimation, as a close observer of the national security beat for the Washington Examiner, is this the kind of thing that you anticipate could turn into another Cuban Missile Crisis in our 2011 immediate future?
I anticipate that this could turn into that. Maybe not something to the extent of what we saw in the 1960s, but certainly a direct threat to our own national security. And it's really interesting that you brought it up, Frank, because I was talking to a source of mine in SOCOM about this, and they
Special Operations Command.
Yeah, Special Operations Command regarding Venezuela. And one of the things that was so fascinating to this person who I spoke with was the fact that it's not getting enough attention.
Yeah.
Why isn't Venezuela getting enough attention? And the relationship with Iran and the fact that these ballistic missiles are there, you know, that are going in these negotiations to move these missiles there and the base that they're building. Why is this not getting enough attention? And, you know, it's something that our national security team needs to take a very, very close look at. And I don't think the administration is paying enough attention to what is happening in Venezuela, in Mexico, in other areas of South America where we've seen a heavy Iranian influence, particularly in Venezuela. We've even seen some of that spill into Peru and into other areas. And, you know, so these issues are going to play a vital role. And of course, with the START Treaty, we're not advancing enough, and we're not protecting our nation enough. This is what our sources are saying. And unfortunately for us, there is going to be some kind of repercussion from this.
Yeah. So I'm afraid you're right. And I'm heartened to hear you say that that you think there ought to be more attention on this whole business of Venezuela, and you're happily in a position to help do that, and we look forward very much to working with you on it, Sarah, because I happen to believe that this is a major national security threat, and the American people need to be acquainted with that fact. And you're absolutely right. The government has to take a very different attitude towards it than the kind of see no evil, hear no evil attitude it has taken to date, especially against the backdrop now of this this START treaty and what the Russians will be saying about how we can't put missile defenses in place. This really amps up the whole problem enormously.
It's almost as if we're naive. The administration is naive, thinking that this is not in the realm of possibilities. Anything is in the realm of possibility. We saw that on September 11th. We've seen it over and over again in attempted attacks on the U.S. We've seen it in the subterfuge behind what Iran and China and the Russians are doing. And you know, and we're seeing it in South America. You know, we're a very fragile, wonderful, beautiful nation that does not exist anywhere else on this planet. You know, our constitution, this is why everybody comes here. So our ability to protect ourselves has to be of the utmost importance. And we can't play games with that. When you travel to the places that you've traveled to, that I've traveled to, and seen it with your own eyes and realize how fragile our life really is, you've got to take these things seriously.
You're absolutely right. Sarah Carter, you do a marvelous job of doing that, and your help to our audience and understanding is deeply appreciated. I hope you have a great new year, and we'll look forward to talking with you next week, well into 2011. That's it for this installment of Secure Freedom Radio. I hope you've enjoyed it and found it edifying. We'll look forward to talking with you again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.